Welcome to Star for the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talkcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com and search for call ID 17702. And don't forget to use your Chrome browser. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. You can also reach me via Skype. My Skype ID is Franz Games, FranzGames. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, just go on Twitter. You can find me at sfuoncall. That's sfuoncall. Also, you want to follow me on my personal account. That's Paul Franz at PaulFranz. And, of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Well, some quick news from A to B. This week, Steve Cole is busy working on Caps Log number 53, blogs, Shapeways, and other projects. And Steve Petrick was also busy working on SFB updates. Also, his files for Captain's Log number 53, he was gathering up all the last information for Captain's Log number 53 and the Tholian Master Starship book, which is also just awesome to see, after working on Gorn Master Starship book for so long. Gene was busy working on articles for Captain's Log number 53, also busy managing Facebook and Twitter, and of course, she proofread some of the pages for Caps Log number 53 for Steve and Steve. Moving on to the SFB Online tournaments, we still have just the Master Starship tournament, Masters tournament, which is going on. There's five games that still need to be played in round two. So we will. They have been played. I think we need three more games played in round two. So moving on to the library. No progress there this week. That leaves complete conversion to 2,470. Yet to be converted 858, and the percentage complete is 74.2%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we got me, we got Dave, that's all we need. So tonight, might be a long one, might be a short one, I don't know. Definitely, it should be interesting, because in our long lines of tournament tactics discussions, we're moving onward and forward to one that's some of these have been quite unique, like Saltorian. I think that's quite a unique crack. Obviously, Andromedan is very unique. Totally different set of tactics both for the ship and for people who are fighting against the ship. But tonight, we have the ISC. The ISC, some of it is standard, i.e., plasma. You know, it's a plasma shocker, but it has one important difference, which I'm sure everyone who's ever flown the ISC or even flown against it knows, and that is, of course, that little PPD, that little sucker right at the front of the ship. Can make things quite interesting along the way, because it's quite a unique weapon in that you can have from four to six I definitely know four to six. I forget if you actually can underload. That's one thing I totally forgot, and I apologize for not looking that up, but I just thought about that off the top of my head. I know you can underload and overload, i.e. you can have it so it's five pulse instead of six. But again, that's one of the things that's unique is just the pulses themselves. Because it also, so that, you know, you fire your weapon, it's not, when you, after you fire it, that's just the first pulse. That's the first impulse that it hits. And if you miss, obviously you get to roll again. And you get to find out, okay, does the next impulse, you actually get, if next impulse, you actually hit the ship, hit your opponent. So, it, you know, and of course, the PBD has the one of the wonderful things about the PBD, of course, is the splash effect. That is, you know, the main element could be anywhere between, well, in theory, it could be down to one, but normally it's like 2 to 4 points of damage on just the facing shield, and then you have the wrap around. So it's kind of like a poor man's hellboard to a certain degree, i.e. it doesn't have to hit just the facing shield, it'll hit surrounding shields so that not all the damage is done to the one shield itself. And of course, because it's multi-impulse weapon, that your opponent has that ability to spread the damage over multiple shields. Now, this could be good, this could be bad. All depends. So, Barry, what do you think about the IC's PPD?
Well, I'm at work right now, so I don't know. As soon as they release me from work, I'm going back to my hotel, trying to sleep, because I have a 7 a.m. flight tomorrow.
Oh, fun.
But PPD, poor man's hellbore. I'll trade off hellbores for PPDs any day of the week.
Oh, I agree there.
Yeah, I mean, you take that Hydrogen Command Cruiser, was it?
The Lord Marshall.
What is the Lord Marshall? Yeah, you replace the two bores with two PPDs. I don't think there's a ship in the game that could touch it at that point. That would be interesting.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yes, the bore can do more damage. I believe PPD could do 24 points. Max,
mm-hmm.
Not overloaded.
That's on the facing shield.
What's that?
No, it's with
the splash. With the splash, 15 on the facing shield total. But the board can do 30 total. Although the board does take more damage or more energy to holding it is not possible, at least for the overload.
Yeah, the PBD does, you know, 1-4-1 between 4 and 10.
Right. Now, having said that, if you can overload the PBD, which is almost impossible, because now all of a sudden, not only do you have a min, but you have a max, and it's over 6 impulses in it. You can't start firing until range 8, and somebody can overrun you range 4, it's possible you might not even get your full 4 impulses.
Yep, agreed there. Because of...
Yeah, that minimum...
Right, because you have that myopic zone.
Right. Which on the Lord Marshall would be awesome, having someone run right into you with your fusion gas.
Agreed, yeah. It's those secondary close-in weapons, which would make things a heck of a lot more interesting to anyone coming in that close. But obviously, the ISC, they still have some weapons up close, which is, you know, the Plasma Gs and, of course, the Plasma Fs.
That is, well, there are more weapons that try to keep people stay away. They're
right.
Not weapons that, yeah, you don't want to... Yeah, you got a whole bunch of plasma coming your way. You don't want to charge.
Agreed, agreed. Most of the time when it comes to plasmas, you're using plasmas as moving terrain. The idea is to keep your your opponent run away from it. That gives you the tactical advantage of coming behind them and chasing them.
Yes.
And if they decide to barrel in, you know, which I've done, I'll have to admit it, I've done it, and run right through the plasma, well, then, okay, yay, you had just did, in this case, 20 points of damage against your ship. Yay, thank you.
Yeah.
If you don't want, to take 20 points of damage, then what do you have to do? You have to use your phasers. Thank you. Now your phaser firing against my plasma instead of against my ship.
Right. Oh, there's the ISC can do a lot if somebody wants to charge it. There's no doubt about that. And then it has to follow up the second plasma for the following turn. And if there's anything left of your ship, then the ISC is toast because it's out at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The PBD that's 4/4, right?
What's that?
The energy for multi-turn arming. I think it's 4/4, correct?
Correct. 4/4 hold is 2.
So overload is that, overload's 4/8. I mean, full overload.
Well, every additional pulse plus 2 points of energy.
Okay. Yeah. Right. So it'd be 4/8 for a full overload. If you just want a 5 pulse overload, it costs you 6.
Right.
Well, of course you can do that. You can add that on the third turn if you want to. You know, and so you can do holding and then put an additional 2 points in, and you get 5 pulses. But it takes you 3 turns. You know, if you do 4 points of energy every turn, you know.
Right, right. And if you have a clone of the Wild Weasel, you have a PPD that's low, that's armed, and you're within range 8, battery up 2 pulses and have at it.
Yep. Oh, agreed, agreed.
And that is deadly. Yeah, an overloaded PPD is devastating.
Mm-hmm.
Especially to someone after they weasel. Assuming you can hit.
Oh.
Which is actually pretty likely.
Mm-hmm. And as you point out, you know, for a fully overloaded PPD, if the ISC is able to hit that for all 6 impulses and all the same shield, that's you just wiped out a shield.
And the splash damage is nothing to sneeze at that point.
Oh, agreed, agreed. Especially, it's less of, it's more of a annoying thing. The first battle pass, but the second battle pass, then that shield that you thought was protected because of, okay, it's not, you're not facing shield, but the thing is, it might be 1 shield off.
Yeah.
And then you get internals, even though most of the damages are going against a good shield.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of those annoying things.
Right. Yeah, the PPD is an interesting weapon. I've heard some people refer to it as the god weapon, but I believe Ken Burnside has used that phraseology. And that's because it can do significant damage at very long ranges.
Oh, agreed. Well, it's like the displacement device in that. In fleet situations, there is a limited number of PPDs that you actually are allowed to have.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But let's see. Even if you have a dreadnought with 4 of them, I remember trying out the what was it? Just a solid battle where I took a 10-ship full echelon. But when Commander's Edition 3, Volume 3 first came out, I did a solitaire scenario where I took an IFT 10-ship fleet and put it full echelon formation up against a Klingon fleet of equivalent BPD just to try the tactics out. And it was ISC got massacred. Absolutely massacred. Because the echelon tactics just didn't work.
Yeah. The biggest issue with the echelon tactics are, one, you're spreading out the ships. And number two, of course, if you try to turn the echelon, it's a real pain in the butt.
Yeah, yeah. What I think the echelon was okay for is that if you outnumber somebody 3 or 4 to 1 on BPC, then you'll take then you can take out ships at longer range and not have to worry about taking damage yourself. And it also presumes that your frigates, your destroyers, are essentially valuable. And that can be replaced for free
right
after every battle.
Really? Well, that's what they always... come on, Gary. Barry, that's why they're called cannon fodder.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Because they were designed to take all the damage, you know, defend
right.
the capital ships, the larger ships, you know,
and slow down the incoming.
Right, exactly. While the PBDs would take down, you know, the other side. You know.
And if you outnumber the other guy 2 or 3 to 1 on BPVs, and you don't mind and consider your frigates and destroyers to be disposable, basically ammunition, and free, then all of a sudden, hey, you're popping cruisers for frigates. It's a win-win scenario. Except for your frigate crews, they don't.
Probably I'm sure they don't appreciate it, but of course, it's like signing up to be on a PF. You know that you're cannon fodder. You're lucky if you survive. You know.
Right. Yeah, you're armed with sledgehammers and no armor and one thing, one hit and you're done.
Right. Exactly. The only thing
getting back to the tournament cruiser, it's a powerful one, but it's hard to fly. I mean, at first glance, it's like, hey, I've got all the advantages, but then when you're actually flying it, it's like, okay, so you get your first battle pass, and you fire your PPD, and you fire at range 15, do you fire at range 10, or do you fire somewhere in between? You know, at range 15, you're pretty much guaranteed to get all your pulses off and not have to get real close. But at range 15, you're very likely to miss on your first shot, your first pulse, and the rest of them are degraded somewhat.
Agreed. And one of the troubles that the IC has, of course, is that it doesn't have plasma S's. It has plasma G's. So that if you only launch a plasma G, some people are going to look at that and go, I'm going to keep coming. And the only reason they might turn off at all is because they know the PVD is going to be right behind it or in front of it. You know. So the PVD can make up for the degraded plasma.
Yeah.
You know, basically, the thing is, it requires the PVD to fire to encourage the people to turn away.
But if you upgraded the G's to S's, the ship would be unbeatable.
Oh, no kidding! No. I agree. I'm not. I wasn't even suggesting that in the way, any way, shape, or form. I really was not. Because I think it is it's powerful enough as it stands.
Right. Its phaser suite is actually, I think, a little light. What, it's got 6P1s?
It's got 6P1s, yep.
And 4P3s?
And 4P3s. And the 4P3s are two left side, two right side. The P1s, you have two 360, two FH, one FAR, and one FAL.
Yeah. So it's got good front arc coverage.
Oh, yeah. And I've seen people use IC in a knife fight, which is not too bad, actually, in a knife fight. Obviously, you can't use the PPD, which is fine. But you've got decent arcs for your weapons, you know, both for the phasers. You got the phaser 3s, of course, to protect the phaser 1s. Also, you have...
And your plasma, yeah.
LPRP.
Right.
And then,
having said that, plasmas are not usually what people bring to knife fights.
Agreed. But at the same time, how many people actually want to go use, do a knife fight against a plasma ship?
Well, that depends on whether the plasma ship has got loaded plasma or not.
Right, exactly. And of course, you got those funky Fs.
Yeah.
Which is why, as a knife fight, it's not that bad. Because what are you going to use those Fs for? Because of... Because those are those weird... I forget what they're called. The rear firing Fs.
Yeah, their firing arcs are actually more pointed towards the rear, which is actually not a bad place to put them.
Exactly. For both, if someone's chasing you, obviously, you can have the plasma that's going out the back. But also in a knife fight, it allows you to bring a shield, you know, a rear shield to face and still be able to fire some weapons at them.
Yes.
Because most of the time, those Fs are not really meant for anything but defensive, defensive.
Yeah. Or discourage someone from chasing you.
Right, exactly. Again, defensive in nature.
Yeah.
So it makes things interesting for a knife fight because, as I said, actually, if you're in a knife fight, obviously you're not going to be using a PPD, which means you're not going to be using you're not going to be charging the PPD. So that's 4 points of power that you've got more.
That's true.
Now, obviously, it's always more difficult against something that has drones where the drones are free. Period. You know.
The other thing is, bizarre as it may sound, if you're in that knife fight situation, you might want to use the PPD as a damage soak to protect the plasmas.
Yeah, that's one of the few situations where you have to think about that at all. And the PPD is hit on, I forget what. I want to say bridge, but that's not right. And that's not hit on torp.
I think it's on Drone.
Wait, I was thinking Drone 2, but that just sounds
I
kind of.
believe it's Drone.
But I know that the.
Now the rear Fs can go on Drone or Plasma.
Right.
Or Drone or
Torp.
Torp.
The rear fan plasma Fs are under the R13.1C restrictions. They can be destroyed on drone and torpedo damage points.
Yep. And they can, you can only fire one of them per turn.
That's offensively.
Right. Well, I guess you could fire them against drones or fighters.
Right.
But how often do people do that? Like fighters, yes.
Right.
I guess you could use it against a shuttle, but
I'm thinking about the hydrogen fighters. Though obviously, the big issue against hydrogen fighters is the hydrogen fighters have those Gatlings, and those 20-point torpedoes get reduced to 4-point torpedoes.
No. They get reduced to 12-point torpedoes. Remember, that to do max 16 takes an 8 off a 20-pointer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're right. And all you need is 7.
Yeah. No, a plasma F is designed to kill a Stinger 2.
Mm-hmm.
Very good at it.
So, in the case of ICM versus Hydra, the Hydra doesn't want to send off those fighters by themselves against the ISC because the ISC will destroy them.
Oh, yeah.
Which means, yeah, it's going to be one of those times which you know that the Hydra will most probably just tractor the fighters and carry them behind them. Or not really behind them. Usually they put them on the same hex and just kind of go around, you know.
Yeah. So are you going to do one of these on any of the other, like the Omega or the LFC ships?
I might.
That would be interesting. That might be interesting.
Agreed. Obviously, if I was going to do a tournament tactics for those, I'd probably stick with some of the more well play tested ones, like the Mazeron, which are
the Mazeron's been well tested. So is the Kolagar.
Mm-hmm.
So has the Magadium.
Hmm.
The Magadium actually works pretty well. I don't know if you ever played that or not.
No.
Well, that one was interesting. It had Tachyon, has Tachyon beams or Tachyon guns.
I can't remember myself off the top of my head.
Well, whatever the Celt has, beams or guns, the Magadium has the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bizarre weapon. It can be held, but it has a fire cool. You can fire 2 turns in a row, but then you have to cool it. And if you hold it, it doesn't count as a firing, and it doesn't count as a cooling. It can be overloaded. It does. It takes, I think, 6 points of energy for an overloaded, and it does more damage than a disruptor. But it can also, it has 2 hit numbers. So you roll the die, let's say the hit number was 7 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
If you roll a 9 or under, it hits the facing shield. If you roll a 7 or under, it hits the facing shield and the opposite shield for the same amount of damage. let's say you're at range 3 with it, with an overload, I think it says like 18 points of damage on the facing, and if you roll low enough, it does 18 on the opposite shield, too.
Yikels.
Or, no, sorry, not 18. 12 or something like that.
Okay, but still, that's quite a bit of damage on the non-facing shield.
Right, right. But it's extremely power hungry, and you only have 3 of them.
Right, which makes sense.
And then the ship has lasers instead of phasers. And the lasers don't do as much damage as phasers, but they tend to do more damage at longer, medium ranges.
Hmm.
And it also has a kind of interesting capacitor system, where the phaser or the laser capacitors are actually boxes on the SSD that can be destroyed. And each box holds 4 points of energy. And if you lose those boxes, all those boxes, you can't fire the lasers.
Nice.
But if you can, they actually act as extra boxes on your SSD to take damage. So there's a plus there. It's kind of weird. And if you have an uncharged box, you might want to take that as a damage. If you only have one laser damage point, you might want to take that as a damage and not have any degradation of your weapon systems. The magazine also has missiles.
Mm-hmm.
They are... it's not a drone. It doesn't do as much damage as a drone. They're called tachyon missiles.
Right.
It fires, I think it has, and the firing, the launchers actually have a firing arc. The arcs are 180 degrees, and I think it has 4 launchers. And you could fire 4 tachyon missiles per turn.
Mm-hmm.
And they hit on the same impulse that they're fired.
Oh yeah.
But you what it's really weird is that you launch them during same impulse activity as drone launch, but then the missile goes to range 2 and stops or pauses. You have a chance to fire at it during direct fire. And then after you fire your defensive fire, it continues on to hit. You also have a chance to fracture it or wild weasel it or use a suicide shuttle on it. Actually, I think it launches before drones do, so you actually could launch a counter drone against it or a counter shuttle against it.
Mm-hmm.
If you tractor it, so you have to tractor at range 2, so it plus 2 points of energy. But if you tractor it, it only has a duration of that impulse, so it kills it instantly. But any firing, defensive firing, has to be at range 2. But they only take 3 points of damage to destroy, but they only do 5 points if they hit.
Okay, so can they hit on the same impulse, or do they have to come like to range 1 and then next impulse they hit?
They hit on the same impulse that they're fired.
Okay, but they would hit after direct fire?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And there's several different types of them. One type takes 3 points of damage, destroy, does 5 if it hits. Another takes 5 points of damage, destroy, it only does 3 points if it hits. And actually, I think they only have a max range of 10, but you can, or you can fire them at range 15, but then they need a cooldown turn. And there is limited ammo. and there's restrictions on how many of each type you can carry. But the tactical missiles are kind of interesting. It's not like a drone where it does so much damage that you have to stop them.
Right.
You can take a whole bunch of tachyon missile hits, and it's like, okay. You know, getting hit by four of them does 20 points of damage. It'll take most of a shield down, but it won't penetrate it. Getting hit with four drones, well,
oh,
that's probably your game over.
Well, not exactly game over, but you'll be hurting.
Oh yeah, yeah. But
yeah,
the Magadium has less total shielding than most ships, but it's arranged in such a way that it can take more damage on one shield facing once, but after that it's kind of toast. Are you familiar with the LMC shielding system?
Yes, I am. With the VRF.
Of course, I've just hijacked this conversation. But yeah,
with outer shields and inner shields and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that, which is. I know we already had the whole discussion about how Ken Burnside did not like the way it got kind of neutered a bit.
Yeah. Ken will tell you, and he's probably right about it, is that the way he originally designed that system worked pretty well, but Steve Petrick looked at that and said, oh my God, that's too powerful, and nerfed it.
Understood. Well, what kind of play testing was done? I mean, to validate that, though.
Well, Ken probably did quite a bit of play testing. He does that.
Right, right. But I'm saying, you know, I would think that, you know, Ken would say, well, the play testing we've done, you know, we don't see that.
Well, here's what. I've heard Ken's side of the story. I have not heard Steve's side of the story. But Ken said he play tested it. It worked great in all his groups. And everybody was happy with it. And then he says that Steve Petrick just looked at it and said, nah, that won't work. Not any play testing whatsoever.
Okay. Well, again, as you said, you're pointing out. We're hearing only one side of the story.
We're only hearing one side of the story, and I don't know Steve Petrick's side of the story.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I would hope he would learn his lesson from the first time he did that. But it was
say
more.
Again?
Well, the first time he did something where he changed basically the way the ship worked.
Yeah.
Without playtesting, was in a tournament scenario where basically he added two phaser ones to the Stellatorian. So it had 10 phaser ones.
Oops.
Yeah. That was an oops. So I can understand him possibly wanting to be a little cautious, but also I'd hope that he would have learned his quote unquote his lesson, but he would learn from that problem. That happened and say, okay, what do the play tests say? And that's just completely judged on his gut.
Well, as I said, I know Ken said that he had play tests to support his position, but I don't know if Steve had any play testing to support his position.
Right. Oh, agreed. The big question about Ken versus Steve is more in my mind is just that Steve, you know, asked the question and they at least listened to what Ken had to say when it comes to that.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, evaluate those playtest reports kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. What happened there?
Mm-hmm. But, no, no one does.
Yeah.
But how?
But I had to tell you the truth. The differences were actually possibly minor in the scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
In that, if you get close enough to a LMC ship to do a significant volley in one shot, then it makes no difference whatsoever.
Right. But yeah, that's something I'll look into in the future. You know, probably I'm not gonna be touched on the LMC, but as I said, probably the Mazeron, maybe the Trobriand.
The Trobriand. I never really. I mean, I played with that Trobriand a lot, but I never was perfectly happy with it.
Yeah. Oh, understood. I know I'm pretty sure we played that ship a few times.
Yeah. Now, and I always kept tweaking it and tweaking it and tweaking it. Now I know that Kia thinks that the Alunda is perfectly balanced, but I've never been able to beat his Alunda. Having said that, Peter is a really good player, so.
Mm-hmm.
But as his Alunda has, I've never seen it defeated.
Well, it sounds like he understands the weapon systems and how to optimize how to use them. You know.
Right. And I was also there were parts of it where it's like there were certain systems on it that were unusable for the rules were published, but just I'm really hijacking your conversation. Whatever happened with the whole commander Omega project that Gary Carney was working on. Where did he ever go with that? Where did he ever make? Did he ever go any further than the last time I saw that? It's been about 10 years.
You mean the Omega, bringing Omegas to the FedCom?
Yeah.
I'm sure they're waiting for playtests. You know, that's one of the things that. Of course, here's the fun thing. And I think we will all agree on this, in that the Omega Empires and the weapons and all that, they were not well tested before they were introduced.
Oh, yeah.
Even against each other. So
against each other they were tested.
Right, so doing the same, taking those weapon systems, moving them over to FedCom, and saying, okay, let's play test and see, make sure that they're not unbalanced and so forth. Of course, they're not going to be balanced because they weren't balanced in the SFB.
I know.
So you know, only the best, the only thing we can do when it comes to that kind of moving the rules, you know, simplifying the rules for FedCom is, okay, are the results that you get on FedCom is the same the results you get in SFB using the ships. That, to me, that's the only way you can judge it at all. You know, unless you're willing to change the way it works in FedCom versus what it, how the way it worked in SFB to fix those issues.
I know. The one thing is, which I know that Aurora, I think, was one of the races, which is basically modified the Comet.
Was that, Barry, you were breaking up?
I think the Aurora was the name of it. They were kind of like a combined Fed and Klingon technology with photons and phasers and ADDs.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they had a slight variant on an ADD, which was a more powerful form of ADD, which actually you could put energy into it.
Definitely. And,
oh, well.
Yeah, agreed.
They also like the Iridani, which I think is certainly one of the races that probably could be balanced. They had their own quirks.
David was mentioning the FDR were a thinly veiled device to get Fed players to try Omega.
What's that?
The FDR in Omega, remember?
FDR?
F. Frank Delano Roosevelt.
Oh, yeah.
That empire that was created, you know, with Klingons and the Federation that were transplanted from the Alpha Octant.
Right.
To the Omega. Oh, yeah. Fra. Yeah. Dave, you're right. It's FRA, not FDR. I didn't think that sounded right. Yeah, FRA. Yeah, the Fra.
Yeah.
That was a thinly veiled device to get Fed players to try the Omega.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually, they, I can kind of agree to a certain degree on that. I'm not sure if that is quite true, but at the very least, it definitely introduced some neat ideas, I think. I forget, did they,
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of good ideas in Omega, some of the best. And that's why I was always drawn to it. It's like, hey, this is pretty cool. There's something different here.
Mm-hmm.
But where it fell down was on implementation.
Oh, agreed.
Yeah, and they did a lot of stuff. Let's do this to be different just because we can't be different. There you go. Balance it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe do it different to be different. Okay, but that's the starting point, but now we got to bring it back to reality.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Dave just mentioned that he enjoys Omega.
But getting back to your ISC tournament cruiser.
Yeah.
Because I think that was what you wanted to talk about tonight.
Right, and then you sidetracked.
Yeah.
It's okay.
How much power does that cruiser have? Is it 36 or 38?
Give me a sec. 38.
Yeah, always a little underpowered even with 38.
That's probably true, though. I don't think it ever was short on power, really. You know, unlike the Lyran, which I think Lyran originally was 38 and they boosted it up to 40. Because of you know, the major big time energy weapons, you know, i.e. like the ESG. But you know, I think overall it's still it's a good ship. I don't think it really needs that. Obviously, IC would be it would be nice if the IC had 40 power because of the PPDs. But you can still fly it because for the you know the G's it's what 223. Yes, 223 said 224 when it comes to rearming them. So, yeah. Overall, you know, a lot of the tactics that you actually use for IC are same tactics that you use for any other plasma ship to a certain degree, but with the twist, as I mentioned before, is that since you're using, you only get plasma Gs, you don't get plasma Ss, you have to augment the launching of your plasmas with the firing of the PPD at the very least. So that, you know, you can get the same result with a plasma ship that has larger torpedoes. And of course, then there's the whole issue with the Fs being rear-facing and defensive versus normal Fs for plasma ships of basically being, I was going to say the same arcs, but that's cause that, but then I realized it's not quite true. But most of the time, you would launch like an S with an F. So you have 50 points of plasma going out against your opponent, and that forces him to turn. While the IC, you're gonna launch probably only one G and then add on to it the firing of the PPD to you know encourage them to also turn away, you know, so that you can get behind them and the tactics all over again. Obviously with the PPD and the plasmas, you have the whole issue of the PPD is a recharges in two turns. The plasmas require three turns to rearm. And I lost Barry. But that's fine. So with that, you know, that means you might actually be holding your PPD for that third turn, or you might be using more fast load Fs. Now, the wonderful part about Gs is that you can still do a fast load F from a G, so you can have 2 points of power. Obviously, the whole issue there is you have to make sure that you have the batteries available to do this, because you can do two for the first turn, two for the second turn for the G, and then you have to add an additional two to launch it as a fast load F. In which case, you know, you have to have the, as I said, have to have it as battery power, and then you can launch it. Obviously, it's a F versus a G, so it's not going to fly as far, both distance-wise, because the G can last all the way out to 20 hexes, and a plasma F can only last till 15. But then, of course, there's the brackets. You know, the F changing from 20 to 15 at just range 6. You know, but obviously, if normally you only use that kind of trick when you are getting close and you need the extra plasma, I'm not so sure you'd want to use that as a consistent basis, because of course we have the issue that sooner or later those batteries will probably go bye-bye. They'll probably be destroyed later on in the game. Because even though it's got what? It's got 8 points of forward hull, so that protects the batteries pretty well. It's not perfect. No. Depending upon how things go, probably within 20 internals, your batteries will start being hit. Possibly, in theory, it could be less. But I'm assuming it's not a big 20 internal volley. So the big 20 internal volley, that could there hit your batteries pretty well because of it's 6, 7, and 8. Those all can hit the batteries. But obviously, 8 is aft hull, 6 is forward hull, and 7 is also, I think it's forward hull too. So, see, this is always a tougher part because you only got G's. So that means it's possible that after the person runs around, instead of waiting for you to launch that additional G, they might come in right then because you no longer have the PBD. You know. So on the off turn, you know, you might actually, in that case, you might be firing your phases, in which case the amount of power use is going to go up, which means you have to slow down. You know, it's a nasty business overall. And that's why, you know, that's the beauty of going in for a knife fight. Because of your ship, believe it or not, the ship is pretty well designed, not designed, but pretty well armed for a knife fight. Because of the plasmas, because of the arcs of those, and of course then the overall, the phaser ones aren't bad. They're just not great. Because when it comes to the rear, you only got two facing plasma ones. Oh, yeah. Sorry, phaser ones. And then, you know, you only have two phaser threes protecting you, which is not bad. Because you shouldn't be, most of the time in a knife fight, you don't keep your one side facing your opponent. You switch, the idea is to switch between sides. You know, so, you know, going around in circles. And then, you know, you go around in a circle, and then you turn the opposite direction and come around the other side. Because if you keep going around the same circles, you're keeping your bad shield towards your opponent. And you don't want to do that. You want to first hit get the damaged shield. Then you want to turn away, get the good shield to the face, which, i.e., you're going to have a different facing phaser threes in that case, in which you should be good. Just think about anything in particular when it comes to different opponents. You know, I don't think there's anything unique for the opponents. You know, standard practices apply. Obviously, the one thing I really haven't mentioned is the whole plasma versus Tholian web issue, which is I just haven't covered it. And that is, when it comes to the web, the question that comes into being in that one, you've got your own portable terrain, but the thing is, what the Tholian can do is, one, it can put up a web. Also, remember that the Tholian has something that for plasma, for seeking weapons, is specifically designed for that, and that is the snares. They're cheap. They slow down things. They can create either two 5-box web or a 1 10-box web. And if you have a good Tholian player, they can get the 10-box web, which means 10 movement. 10 movement. 10 movement flat out just for a G. It goes through, it goes from a 20 to the 15 bracket. And remember, also, you're sticking there. So it's not going to take, it's not going to be just 10 impulses. Most probably, if that's stuck there, it's going to, basically, it's going to die before it hits the Tholian. Which leaves it to, obviously, knife fighting does become an option. And you might be doing a lot of bolting to avoid that. Obviously, the one thing to keep in mind is that if he's not using his web against you, whether it is, well, you know, whether it is, you know, for putting up his own mobile terrain to fight behind, or just using it to capture the seeking weapons, the big issue that comes into being is that actually the good thing about that is that then he's not bolting that at you. Because remember, the Tholian can use an actual Tholian, we call a web bolt. So he actually has another direct fire weapon. So it's an interesting weapon. It's rarely used just because it's not exactly very power efficient. I think I pretty much covered all the rest in previous tacticals, you know, when it comes to plasmas. And I said the most unique thing about this, the IC, is one using plasma Gs versus plasma Ss, and it's got the PBD, which means that you have to use those together to help have the same effect that normal plasma players, you know, for, you know, Romulan or Gorn, can avail themselves of. So with that, I think we'll wrap it up for this evening. Had a nice little discussion with Barry, including the Omega, and possibly doing those in the future. And, of course, the discussion of the ISC and some of the tactics, and, of course, the PBD, which is a main source of damage, and, of course, one of those things that can be quite tricky with the ISC. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.